hello. Hello to all of you out there, and welcome to this week's edition of the Arts Magazine program. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. It's a cold, cold day, but it's nice and warm inside of our studios here at KKFI as you listen to us here on the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. Glad to have you with us. Never happier than to have a happy audience hearing about all the holiday shows going on, and oh, there's been a bunch of them. I've seen several. There's many more to go, and many of them have become a tradition, as the interviews we're going to do today. All of those shows have become traditions here in Kansas City. The Kansas City Ballet, for instance, is doing the Nutcracker. They do it every year, and they've done it for many years. As we've heard, slight changes perhaps are made over the years, and more changes, I guess, are in store for next Christmas. But we're going to talk about the one happening this Christmas, the Nutcracker. It's at the Kauffman Center. It opens on Friday, December the 7th. That would be Saturday, December the 6th, and it will run through the 24th of December at the Kauffman Center downtown, that big impressive building where the ballet moved just a few years ago. With us to tell us all about this year's edition of the Nutcracker, two of the people so involved in the show, it would be easy to say maybe the show couldn't go on without either one of them, perhaps. Is that a fair assessment, do you think? She's nodding her head yet. Yeah. Remember, we have to speak on the radio, but I like the nod. That's going well. Leah Ryder is with us. Mm-hmm. She plays the key role of Clara in the show. The show is kind of built around your character. She is a student at the ballet school, and she plays the lead role of Clara. Glad to have you with us, probably for the first time. Probably.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, nice to be here. Nice to have you here with us. Lisa Thorne Vincent is with us as well. She is the stager for this year's show. She'll tell us all about how that works and all of that. But she was formerly a dancer with the Kansas City Ballet. How many times did you dance in the Nutcracker, Lisa?
I danced for the company for 17 years.
That's a long time.
Yes.
So you were in 17 different versions, probably, of this show?
Probably, yes. I definitely was.
Did they make little changes from year to year?
They do. Every year there's always a little something. Keeps it fresh for the dancers, for the artistic staff, for the crew. Everybody's got to stay on their toes, so to speak.
Sure. Well, when Devin Carney was here a few months ago, he told us that some changes would be in store for next year, and I guess we can't let the cat out of the bag on any of that.
No, it's probably a nice surprise.
This is the last chance to see the Bolander.
Exactly.
Staging.
Yes.
And, of course, he got some of his ideas probably from the famed George Balanchine. Because
he
studied and worked under Balanchine.
Absolutely, yes, he did. He worked very closely with George Balanchine, and so when he created his Nutcracker here in Kansas City, he did bring a lot of that influence to his production, and over the years tweaked it and changed it. He had different dancers with different abilities and strengths, and, of course, you know, he changed costumes a little bit and the set, so things have evolved over the years and changed.
Now, many of the young people in the show come from the ballet school, and you, Leah, are a member of the ballet school.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get picked for this for the lead role of Clara?
First, we have to audition, and it takes about 2 or 3 weeks for them to let us know what part we've gotten. And last year, I was a ginger in the Mother Ginger scene with the big skirt, and that was really fun. And this year, I'm Clara in the Nutcracker, and the last Bolander Nutcracker, so it's a really big honor for me.
I'll bet so. What are the challenges moving up from a ginger to the role of Clara?
As a ginger, there was less acting, and most of Clara's performance is pantomime and acting. There's still dancing to be Clara, but I just think that as a ginger, I didn't do very much acting, just dancing.
Clara has a lot more performing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the interesting thing about ballet. There's no real lines in the show.
Yeah.
So you have to pantomime and act as well as dance
mm-hmm.
your way through the part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you have a choreographer or a stager to help you along with that?
Yeah.
That's what I'm here for. Yeah,
there's a lot of people in this show, especially children. I guess how many, on any one performance, there's
about 60 children involved in the production in each performance, and so we have in many cases we have a couple of casts, sometimes three casts, depending on the role. We have two Claras performing. So, yeah, it's a lot of children. It's 120 to 150 children involved in the entire production.
Kind of like, do you feel like you're kind of like a ringmaster directing this squad and this squad?
Well, sometimes. You know, it's a lot of moving parts to keep moving.
Yeah, I'll bet so. Is there ever a time when everyone's on stage at once other than the curtain call?
Everyone... you know, there's a lot of people on stage at the end in the big finale, most all of the characters from second act. But there are two acts in the ballet, and the first half takes place. It starts out as a party at the home of a lovely couple, and they are hosting a holiday party, and their daughter Clara and their son Fritz are there, and they invite their friends, and they invite... Clara's godfather, Drosselmeyer, and he comes to the party and brings gifts, and he brings a nutcracker. And he gives the nutcracker to Clara, and her mischievous brother is jealous, and he breaks it. And kind of, you know, a little downer there for a moment at the party, but Drosselmeyer saves the day. He fixes the nutcracker and gives it back to Clara and says everything will be okay, and everyone goes home happy. And Clara, in the middle of the night, she comes down to check on her nutcracker. She's very partial to this new toy and wants to make sure it's okay. And when she comes into the parlor area where the nutcracker's been laid to rest, the room starts to change, and the tree magically grows, and the toys become life-size, and the mouse king and all his mice come out, and there's a battle, and the nutcracker fights the mice, and he saves the day, and he wins the battle and overcomes the evil mouse king. And in that process, Drosselmeyer comes back out and magically turns the nutcracker into a prince.
Is that what we all want, Clara? We want a prince?
Yeah, that's mostly why.
Is the Mouse King trying to steal the nutcracker?
I think
it was a diamond or something?
I think the Mouse King is just arch enemies, because it comes out like as a castle and then as a boat, and the boat is where the mice come out, and then the castle is the... soldiers and the Nutcracker Prince, and I just think that those are quote-unquote enemies in, like, the toy world, I guess.
Yeah, sort of like enemies you would have in a contemporary movie today. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this is a dance on stage, and it's been around. Oh, how many years has the Rep been doing the Nutcracker? Do you know?
The Kansas City Ballet's been doing the Nutcracker since 1981.
Well, that's a lot.
So it's been really popular, a favorite.
I'll bet. Yeah. For many years, you were in several of them at least. Or 17, I guess you said.
Yes, I joined the company in 1988.
What parts did you have in this?
I've danced almost all the parts.
Wow.
A female woman can dance in the Nutcracker.
No, we wouldn't expect you to do Drosselmeyer.
No, I didn't get to do Drosselmeyer. But it's a really colorful and diverse program. You know, what's lovely about this Nutcracker is it has so many challenges for the dancers, and it's so colorful and entertaining for the audience. So I think that's what keeps it fresh. I think there's something for everyone, and Todd Bollander was really great at responding to Tchaikovsky's beautiful score really showing us, you know, the Arabians are sensual and fluid, and then the, you know, sparkle and shine of the Spanish dancers. You know, there's a great contrast throughout the entire show, and then there's that whole dramatic side to it of Clara's journey, from the party scene to the battle scene to she gets to go off and to the land of snow with her prince, who takes her through the land of snow, and that's really beautiful. The snow scene's quite lovely. And then in the second act, she's brought to the land of the kingdom of the sweets and meets the sugar plum and her cavalier and all the divertissements. So, you know, it's a really diverse program. There's something for everyone, and I think it's beautiful. It's a beautiful production.
The Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy is one of the featured,
most talked about, anyway, parts
of the show.
It's quite a beautiful part, and there's a pas de deux between her and her cavalier, and they each perform solos, and the Waltz of the Flowers is probably... most people would recognize that music. They probably hear it in the mall and shopping, you know, as they're out during the holiday season. And that's probably one of my favorite sections. There's a dewdrop in the middle of all these beautiful flowers, and that was probably my favorite role, I have to say. She's Mr. Bollander, when he choreographed that, he told his dancers that he was creating a part for a woman that was very diverse, that could jump and turn, but could be flexible and graceful. And I loved doing that. I loved that challenge. And the other neat part of that is that he also really expected his dancers to bring a personality, their own individual strengths and inspiration to a part, and he looked forward to that. He wanted to see that in his dancers.
Although you don't have any lines to say, you dance and you act out the story as well.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. You bring your own, you know, sense of wonder and excitement to the role. So,
sure. Now, is the Sugar Plum Fairy a role that you would inspire to?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, Claire is pretty good. That's one of the feature ones. But a lot of the young ladies that come here say, one day, I want to dance the Sugar Plum Fairy.
Yeah, I think it's like every little girl's dream that's a little dancer. They all like look up to the Sugar Plum Fairy. They all think she's really beautiful, including me. She's, I don't know, I just love the Sugar Plum Fairy so much.
Yeah.
And all the costumes that she wears.
That's a good point. In fact, the whole show is involved with a lot of costumes. That has to be a major job for somebody over there.
That's true, yes. We have a costume director and many people that work in her department in the costume shop that help get the dancers ready. And, you know, they're wearing lots of tights and ribbon, and there's a lot of makeup and headpieces, and there's a lot to keep track of.
Yeah, in fact, it says here more than 500 costumes, accessories, and headpieces worn. Also, 10 pieces of facial hair and 2 wigs.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a grandfather out there, and there's the men have, yes, they have facial hair that they wear in the
party scene. They can't grow their own beards and mustaches?
Well,
or they're not old enough?
They could. Oh, yes, the men are old enough, but then we want them to be able to wear it. Have a different look in the second act. So we want to be able to, you know, change. You know, everybody rotates roles, so they're not doing the same exact role every night. So you might see the Sugar Plum Fairy might be the mechanical doll the next day. That would be a challenge, and
it helps keep it fresh.
Absolutely.
Because there's a lot of performances of it during the month of September. But about how many? It's more than 20.
Yeah, there's about 21 performances. Yeah. We have a few productions we do for schools. They come in the morning that a lot of kids get a chance to come to the Kauffman Center and see a full production with full orchestra. So it's a great opportunity for younger people. And then we have all our productions that are open to the public. So all in all, it's about, I think, about 21 shows.
About how many do you get to be in? Probably 11, 12?
11 performances. 11. And the other Clara gets to be in 11, I think, too.
Well, it'd be hard to do every one.
Yeah.
It says here there's 4 different casts.
That's right.
Yeah.
4 different casts. So, like I said, you know, one day you're doing... you know, you're dancing a snowflake. The next minute, you might be in the Chinese scene, or you might do both in a show. You know, one day, you're a mom on stage, and the next day, you're grandma. You don't know.
People that see this show are always impressed by, of course, the dancing. the number of people in the show, they always rave about the costumes and the snow, as you're talking about, and that one special, I will give it away, event that happens right at the end. That takes some people by surprise as well.
Yeah, there's some things that fly up into the sky, and it even snows on stage.
Yeah, so. It even snows on stage.
There is definitely some magic.
Yeah, that's right. We're speaking with Lisa Thorne-Vincent, the stager, and a former ballet dancer as well, and Leah Ryder, who plays the role of Clara in the Kansas City Ballet production of The Nutcracker, opening this Saturday, December 6th, and running through Thursday, or I should say it may not be Thursday, running through the 24th of December, Christmas Eve, at the Kauffman Center. That's where the performances are being held. The number to call for more information is 816-931-2232, or you can go online to kcballet.org. You can make arrangements that way as well, or get information, or you have more choices here. There's a lot of performances, so there's a lot of tickets. You can go to the ballet box office at the Bollinger Center, and they will sell you tickets there. You can go to the Kauffman Center box office. They have tickets available there. Or they can answer your questions about the Nutcracker running, I guess, for 17 years now in Kansas City with a big cast. And you're the stager, Lisa, and it's a Do you have to get it really down and organized to make it work?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's a few of us that stage, and you do have to be organized. You have a lot of people to deal with. I think also knowing kind of how the rhythm of the day should go, you know, what parts need to be worked on early on so that the dancers have a good sense of the feeling of the part, and they get a lot of time to work on it. And then eventually, how do we integrate the children into the scenes? Because often we start rehearsals separately. The adults will rehearse separately from the children. And then we gather together on weekends, often, when the kids are out of school, and we'll put together big scenes. So we have to time that. You know, when does everybody know their own part? And then when can they get together and actually get to work off of each other? And That's fun. It's exciting to see that.
Oh, sure. Well, you like to see the people move up. Has there been an instance, and I imagine there probably has, it's probably been several, of starting at the ballet school, being very young, playing one of the very minor parts, and then working their way up over the years and playing one of the lead roles?
You know, I think that has happened over the years. I know that there's a wonderful performer, Christopher Barksdale, who danced with the company for many years, and he was in the school and learned a lot of parts and worked his way up through and then became a company member. And we've had dancers. What's even really interesting and exciting to see is there have been young Claras that have gone off and done Broadway productions, and you know, so it's really neat to see them as young, very young actors in those early days and how they continue that tradition.
Yeah. Well, I'll bet there's a lot of potential talent there. Can you recognize at a very young age if someone will be able to develop? I mean, I've been told that sometimes you can see, even in a very young person, certain signs that there might be some real development on down the line.
Oh, absolutely. I think one of the things that's really special about the world of ballet and dance is that you have to express yourself without words. And when you see young people like Leah, who have been so successful about using movement and learning a technique, as well as expressing themselves with their face and how they tilt their head and how they move their body along with the steps they are given, when you can see that kind of instantly happening in front of your face with a, you know, a young child, I mean, it's really fun. And you know, Leah is an example of a young dancer that, you know, like she said, she was a ginger last year. You know, we would not have necessarily known she was going to be Clara this year. But as she grew and developed, and she just got to perform with the company in their production of Alice in Wonderland. And the director got to see her in that as well. So it's really neat to see the students getting opportunities to perform with the company, and it gives the director a chance to see a young dancer develop and what they might get to do in the future.
Yeah, there's nothing better than doing a great job in front of the director.
Yeah.
That kind of would lead to other things.
Mm-hmm. And if you go to summer intensives that happen to, because they traveled from Cincinnati, I think. Wasn't it Cincinnati?
Uh-huh. Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah. And if you go to a summer intensive in another city that may have done a performance with your school, then they would have already seen you and have an idea of how you perform and how you work with them. And so I think that's a really good opportunity.
I know you probably like to put your own mark on things, of course, mm-hmm. but do you find yourself emulating what you've seen before?
I do. I watch some of the company dancers during party scene, and I get ideas for what I can do to, like, act excited or scared or any other emotions that might happen during the whole Nutcracker, too. I just think they're a really good example for any of the young children.
Have you seen any of the television portrayals of it? Does that help, or is that more of a hindrance? Because stage is different from the movie or television.
Yeah, I think the stage is much different because you have to use your face and body more, and on television you just hear what they say. But you on TV you also see their face, but on the stage you have to use it even more so that you can see what you're talking about.
Kauffman Center is a big place. Mm-hmm. You need to see, be expressive enough towards people even far back and see what's going on. See, mm-hmm. I guess you need to do more than with your face. You need to use your arms and legs and things like that as well. Yeah. Did you feel any pressure on this role? Were you, oh boy, or was it, well, that's great, but can I pull this off?
I was really excited, but I was also nervous because I knew I would be in the whole production, and that's a lot to learn. And last year, like I said, I was a ginger, and there wasn't much acting, so I had to get used to that. But now I think I've gotten the hang of it more. At the beginning, it was really awkward and nerve-wracking to do the acting on stage. But I think it's gotten easier over the last few weeks.
Are you ready for the opening this coming Saturday night?
I'm very excited for the opening shows, but I'm really sad when it's going to be over.
Oh. Well, you'll do a bunch of, you'll do over 20 performances this month, and that is a lot for performers.
Mm-hmm.
Other shows don't have nearly that many performances as the Nutcracker, but it shows you the demand, how many people want to see it. A lot of the shows you'll go to probably will be sold out.
Mm-hmm.
Will that be intimidating? That's a big place. Have you been, well, you probably haven't been rehearsing in the Kauffman yet, but you've probably been there for things.
I have been rehearsing in the Kauffman last week.
Yeah, we went in on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we started rehearsals on Fridays.
It's a big place as you look around, and to think that there are performance spaces around the world that are even much bigger than that. Is it daunting to look up there and see where all those people are going to be in another week?
I think it is kind of scary at first, but you, if you're a performer and if you kind of go and look at all the places that you may be performing, I think it gets easier over the years as you get older also.
Sure. Now, there are some special events connected with the show coming up this Friday. For instance, the 5th is the Nutcracker Ball.
Right. That's happening at Union Station. It's going to be quite a lovely event, I'm sure. It's always a really good time, too.
Now, at the same number and the same website, they can get information about that as well?
Absolutely, yes. It'll be a most elegant evening, I'm certain of it. And excuse me.
Oh, that's fine.
The Kansas City Ballet Dancers will be performing at it, so they will be there as well.
So you don't really get out of a rehearsal then to go?
Not really.
They'll still work you probably all morning and afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get to go to the ball in the evening.
Yeah.
Now, an event that is often sold out, I haven't heard whether it is this year or not, but Saturday, I guess before the performances on Saturday, the Sugar Plum Fairy Ball, and that's always popular, and often they tell me it's sold out.
That's another wonderful event, and that helps. A lot of the proceeds of that event go toward the Kansas City Ballet School, so the school is very excited about that event. They have students performing. And there's all kinds of special things happening with a wonderful meal, and then everyone will go over to the opening performance on Saturday at 2 p.m.
At 2 p.m. in the Kaufman Center. And, of course, it's the as I said earlier, the last month of performances with the Todd Bolander choreography. And then next year they'll be changing some things. It's very secret, as I understand it. I might have to be a spy to find out what's going to be changing.
I think so, yeah, I do. I think it's all very hush-hush right now.
That's
so.
Right. You're not worried. You'll probably be in the show next year. Are you worried about the changes? I'm just kidding.
I don't think I'm worried.
No. It'll be manageable, I'm sure, whatever you do. But so change is constant. You'll find through your life that things are always going to change every once in a while. And you just have to adapt and go with it. You probably saw many changes.
Absolutely. You know, I think Devin Carney, the director, he will be choreographing a new version, but I have a strong sense that he'll be keeping close to the tradition of Nutcracker. And, you know, I know that he loves to see the dancers dancing a lot, and he's very musical and very enthusiastic choreographer and person. So I'm thinking that this production is going to be really special and neat. I'm looking forward to seeing whatever he comes up with. So.
It's become one of Kansas City's annual holiday events, at least as far as the arts community is concerned. The Kansas City Ballet production of The Nutcracker opens this Saturday, December 6th. Performances on various days. It's not every day of the week. They usually probably have Mondays off.
Yes, we do take Mondays off.
But you'll have to check the website or call down there. And website probably best to see the entire calendar. A lot of shows covering a lot of days, and on some days two shows.
Absolutely,
as
yes.
Well. So you need to check that out. kcballet.org. There's a number you can call as well, 816-931-2232, or you can go to the ballet box office at the Bolander Center. That's also the rehearsal center for the dancers, and at the Kaufman Center box office as well for the 17th year of the Nutcracker.
Actually, I think it's more than that. We've been doing it since 1981.
So it's a lot more than that, I guess.
Yes.
Going on beginning this Saturday night at the Kaufman Center. Keep up the stamina. Drink plenty of fluids.
Thank you.
Make sure you replace the fluids that you'll burn up while you're dancing, as you well know. I want to thank my guests for both being with us. Leah Ryder, who performs the role of Clara. She's one of the students in the ballet school. And Lisa Thorne Vincent is the stager, a former dancer with the Kansas City Ballet. If we had more time, I'd ask you about some of the shows you were in. But sadly, our time has come to an end. Thank you both for being with us another time.
Thank you so very much.
We're going to take our mid-show break. When we return, another holiday tradition, maybe two, to tell you about when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Freeze Frame! Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. Stephen Hawking is undoubtedly the world's most famous astrophysicist. His work, A Brief History of Time, is one of the best-selling science books of all time. The heartfelt drama, The Theory of Everything, is a biopic and love story that focuses on Hawking's relationship with Cambridge co-ed Jane Wilde, their courtship, and Hawking's subsequent struggle with Lou Gehrig's disease. Eddie Redmayne and Felicity Jones play Stephen and Jane, and their terrific performances provide the backbone for this touching romance. While Redmayne's part is obviously the showiest, Jones is every bit as good in what is arguably the most difficult role, that of the supportive and patient spouse. Director James Marsh, best known for documentaries, manages to avoid making the movie too saccharine. The emotions come from an honest place, so the tears are well earned in this beautifully produced drama. Smart and involving, The Theory of Everything proves its worth. Kansas City homeboy Jason Sudeikis reteams with Jason Bateman, Charlie Day, and Jennifer Aniston for Horrible Bosses 2, the sequel to their bawdy 2011 hit. Instead of banding together to knock off their evil employers, Sudeikis, Bateman, and Day conspire to kidnap the son of an investor who's trying to bankrupt their fledgling business. To say that this movie is vulgar is a gross understatement. The goofy action is punctuated with blue ad-libs that, like the first film, are designed to shock. Is it distasteful? Yes, but if you enjoyed the first movie, you'll probably laugh yet again. You'll know exactly what you're in for. Also opening this week, the latest animated offering in the Smash Madagascar franchise, The Penguins of Madagascar. This DreamWorks production was written and directed by Prairie Village native and Shawnee Mission East grad Eric Darnell, who was also responsible for the first two hit movies. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM. Freeze Frame!
The Kansas City Star's Mike Hendricks talks about his extensive reporting on the dangers of lightly regulated railroad traffic in Kansas City on Eco Radio Monday at 6 p.m.
This week, we're embracing the mystery of darkness with Episcopal priest Barbara Brown Taylor.
The ways in which we use the language of darkness, I think, misses a great deal of truth about the richness, the beauty that also takes place in the dark.
I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Interfaith Voices, Tuesday at noon, right before the Jazz Disciple.
90.1 FM presents the Wednesday Midday Medley 10th Anniversary Party with host Mark Manning. Friday, December 12, 2014, 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. at Davies Uptown Ramblers Club, featuring the Petal Jets, the Philistines, and Dolls on Fire's album release party for their new album, Synesthesia. That's the Wednesday Midday Medley 10th Anniversary Party, Friday, December 12th at Davies Uptown Ramblers Club. For more information, kkfi.org/events.
Welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. A lot to get into today because there's so many holiday shows going on. In fact, the Kansas City Repertory Theater will have two shows going on simultaneously, one at the campus, you know, at the Spencer Theater on the campus, and one downtown at the Copacan Center. Two holiday shows going on at once, and actors from both of the shows are here. So we can't dawdle. We have to move right along. With us from Santaland Diaries, that is the show that will be opening on the 6th at the Copacan Space, downtown Kansas City. It's right by the Power and Light District. What better area to get a lot of energy from down there for a very energetic show, Santaland Diaries. And Brian Sills is with us, a New York-based actor. He's originally from Toronto, Canada. He's done the Santaland Diaries. He's been in Cabaret. He's been in the national tour of The Lion King. He's been with the Chicago Shakespeare Festival.
That's right. I did 3-4 seasons with Chicago Shakespeare.
Yeah, so now you're in Santaland Diaries.
Now I'm in Santaland Diaries.
A mischievous elf, would that be a correct?
Sure, you can say that. Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks.
I don't think I've had you on before.
No, I'm thrilled to be here. And this is my second year coming back to do the Santaland. It was successful last year, I'm proud to say, and they decided to, well, anytime a theater wants to bring you back, it's a good sign.
Sure, they changed directors on, yeah.
They changed directors on me, but they didn't change me.
That's,
and that's
right.
The most, that really is kind of the only thing I'm worried about. I'm like, well, they brought me back. So.
That's right. Just worry about what you have to
right,
do.
Exactly.
And Shanna Jones is with us as well. She's one of the shenanigans. That infers that there's a lot of foolishness going on.
Loads of foolishness, yes.
Okay, you're kind of away from the mic, so get a little closer to the mic. You have a number you want to perform.
Yeah, we're going to show you, just to give you a little snippet, a little sample of some Santaland Diaries.
Oh, we love snippets.
Okay, good. Well, we'll give it this little section we call Meet the Elves. This is where the character Crumpet, my character, talks about some of his coworkers and lets you know exactly what his daily work life is like.
I see. Okay.
Our elfin guide says we must cover our uniforms with a shirt or smock when dining in the cafeteria. It's funny that they would use the word dining. Grown men and women in candy cane leggings do not dine. They feed. Yesterday, I sat beside an elf from Flushing named Ginger Snap. She's a short, squat woman whose knickers fit her like tights. And complementing this overall look is a thick pair of oversized glasses and a swarm of plastic barrettes she uses to clamp down her hair. I had noticed Ginger's snap back in training. I'm surprised she's lasted this long. No one could say she's not enthusiastic. Any more spirit, and they'd have to medicate her. Her problem is that she's, well, stupid. During training, she had her hand in the air every 2 minutes asking questions that were so obvious, it made me wonder how she ever managed to find her way to the 8th floor. We'd be running overtime, ready to go home, and she'd raise her hand and ask, "Oh, can we wear our costumes home?" Who would want to? What possible pleasure could it give you to board the subway dressed as a gnome? Management had already laid down the law about our uniforms. Her question was pointless. It was like asking, "Oh, can we force children onto Santa's lap at knife point?" No. The answer's no. So could you sit down and shut up? At the end of our training session, I watched her approach one of the managers asking if she could work as an elf year-round.
You better watch out. You better not cry. Better not pout. I'm telling you why.
I had lunch this afternoon with an elf I've codenamed Flaky. She's recently moved here from Kansas City, and she's not very happy to be working for Santa. Every time I see her, she's telling someone, "I would rather be a starving artist in New York than to be artistically starving in Kansas City, Missouri." I know. It makes me wince. She even talks to children that way. She'll say, "I'm not a real elf. I'm an artist." Today, she showed me some slides of her work. During her off hours, Flaky stays busy gluing human hair to clocks and telephone receivers. Everything she touches winds up looking like a Persian cat. "Oh," I said, "well, that's a cute idea." This was the wrong thing to say. She strenuously objected to the word cute and then tried to sell me a blonde clock radio, telling me she'd be willing to let it go for $300. I said, "Well, aside from the fact that I don't have $300, who really wants to part the bangs of their alarm clock to read the time?"
"He's making a list. He's checking it twice. Gonna find out who's naughty or nice."
Now, the overall cutest elf is this fellow from Queens named Snowball. Snowball tends to ham it up for the children, sometimes literally tumbling down the path to Santa's house. I tend to frown on that sort of behavior, but Snowball is hands down adorable. I mean, you just want to put him in your pocket. Yesterday, we were working together as Santa elves, and I became excited when he started saying things like, "I'd follow you to Santa's house any day, Crumpet." It made me dizzy, this flirtation. By mid-afternoon, I was running into walls. At the end of our shift, we were in the bathroom changing our clothes when suddenly we were surrounded by 3 Santas and 5 other elves, all of them guys Snowball had been flirting with. Snowball just leads elves on, elves and Santas. He's playing a dangerous game.
"He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. Whoa, you better watch out. Better not cry. Better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town."
Very good.
There you go. It
gives us a flavor of the show. I guess there's some discontent at the North Pole.
It's not everything you think it might be.
Union problems?
There's union problems. There's all kinds of problems. There's educational problems. There's mental stability problems. There's all kinds of problems.
Well, I can see that. There's a lot of pressure. There is. All that ready.
It is.
And you have to organize all that as Crumpet does.
It's a real life chronicle of when David Sedaris worked at Macy's in Santaland when he was a struggling writer in New York City. Uh-huh. So this is all actually true. It's all that he chronicled the whole thing. Macy's Herald Square, which on a daily basis gets 22,000 people coming to visit Santa.
I'll bet so.
It's a little busy. and so he took this job because it was the only one he could get, and then he chronicled the whole thing, and now it's been turned into this play. And It's hilarious. It's very funny.
Sure. Now, this is the second year you've done that here. Have you done it before?
I've never done it before prior to this. No,
yeah. So. Well, you're most of the show, with all due respect to Shannon. You're most of the show, so a lot of pressure on that.
It's a little different from last year. Last year it was almost two separate events. So Shanna and Clay, the Shenanigans, opened the show, and then I came out and did the Santaland Diaries. Now this year we've incorporated Shanna into the actual piece. So she does, like you heard just now, she underscores some of the scenes. She helps to transition some of the scenes with music. And so it's, I keep saying, it's a little bit like David Sedaris meets Prairie Home Companion. It's which I think is fantastic. I mean, I think we're building something different from last year, but really, really great.
Yeah. Now you have a nice long run as well.
Yeah.
December the 6th through the 24th at the Copacan Space Center.
And I got to go because it's Christmas Eve and I've got presents to deliver.
That's
I got
right.
things to do.
Got to get on with it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot to go.
Yeah.
So now, Shanna, you've done some shows with the Rep as well.
Yeah, I was here for Santaland last year, and then did Romeo and Juliet.
That's
right afterward.
The one. No, that's the one I was told about. No, you had one of the interesting roles in Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, I was probably the first female Balthazar ever.
That's what I was told.
Yeah, it was wonderful, though. It's a great, great production to be a part of.
It sure is. Well, you'll be opening on December 6th and run through the 24th. I assume most evenings, but. But Monday evening?
Yeah, I think we run Wednesday to Sunday.
Okay.
I believe.
Right.
So I got to get checked on that. And to do that, you go to kcrep.org. And as I understand, it's the same box office number. They're going to be busy with
these shows. They're going to be busy.
816-235-2700 or kcrep.org for the Santaland Diaries, one of two shows the Rep will be having run in repertory,
exactly.
At different locations.
Yeah.
Thank you for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having us. This is great.
Yeah, thank you.
Sounds like you have a lot of fun, both of you, doing the show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here, of course. We have to move along, and not because we could chat all day.
I'm here.
Once on a board, so I could last you about these labor problems.
Oh, great.
In general, but we have to move along because we're also going to talk to the people from the Christmas Carol. You don't have to leave, but I would like Rusty and Vanessa to move on up as they were. Not like a deluxe apartment in the sky, but just welcome back. Rusty Sneary is with us. He has done many shows here lately. He plays, in fact, we have Mr. and Mrs. Fred both here as well. Rusty was in the Who and the What. Recently, he was also in that production of Romeo and Juliet, The Foreigner, Death of a Salesman, August, Osage County, A Christmas Carol, Lilium, and he's also with the Living Room. He was also with the Living Room Theater's production of Carousel, which was moved from the Living Room Theater here in town to the Kansas City Repertory Theater.
It was.
And you came along with it, of course, and he's done many other shows here as well, both at the Living Room and here in town. He even did a version, I see here, of Flowers for Alt at the Coterie. Yeah, that was a very impressive yet sad play in many
ways. It is a very sad play.
Yeah, but you're doing the Christmas Carol now. You're Mr.
Doing
a
Christmas Carol, yeah. Mr. and Mrs. Fred are played by elves this year.
Really?
A little cross promotion. We have a song prepared as well. Shannon will get her guitar back up.
Vanessa Severo plays Mrs. Fred, and she's also a dance captain as well. She has done a lot of things. I'm going to have to edit some of your credits.
Okay.
Is that all right? Vanya and Sonia, you were especially good in that.
Thank you.
It's kind of a psychic.
Yes.
You knew what was going to happen before it happened. Somehow.
Just being myself.
Self as well. Spike, August, Osage County, Cabaret, A Christmas Carol, of course. You've done it for a bunch of years. A Christmas Story, the musical, the year that they've done that as well. Gypsy, Musical Theater Heritage, many times at the Unicorn as well. I'm just going to have to stop, I guess. How many years have you done The Christmas Carol?
Oh, this is my sixth year.
Sixth year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dear. Joy's room with the same group of ladies.
No, it switches around. It's been nice, though. I got a good, powerful group this year.
It's a strong coven.
I do. We called ourselves the coven. I've got Peggy Friesen, Cheryl Weaver, Katie Kalaherka, and myself. So.
The coven.
The coven.
That's right. Won't ask any questions about that. Rusty, how many times have you done it a number of times as well?
This is my seventh, I believe. I took a little bit of a hiatus when I went away to New York.
You weren't always Fred. You were other.
No, I started as Dick Wilkins. It was a lot of fun, and then moved to Fred, and then moved to both Fred and Ebenezer as a young man, and now back to Fred. Yeah. Just Fred.
It's a long run. How do you keep it fresh every night? I looked at that schedule and I saw how many times you were both doing this show. How do you manage to keep up the intensity? The night I saw it, it was great. It was intense. It was fresh. It was very lively.
Well, when you look at the man and the myth and the legend, Gary Neal Johnson, that's just doing his 100th production at the Kansas City Repertory Theater right now, 13 years as Ebenezer Scrooge in this production, and he really leads the charge.
Yeah.
When you look at him and he's making new choices and is so in the moment every show, you know, 7 to 10 shows a week sometimes, then it makes it really hard to not be right there with him. And
he's committed every single time. I mean, and he never gets to leave the stage. He's on there from beginning to end. And every time you come on, I mean, he's just, it's heartfelt and it's connected. And so it's easy to go on that ride with him. But, you know, it's just, if you're invested in the story, I think that's what keeps it alive. And that's how you do it every single time.
From the audience's perspective, there's always a little changes this year. In the last few years, there's been some technical changes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very impressive.
The story remains just as true and still continues to be many people's, I think, first theatrical experience and touches a lot of families and lives around the holidays. So that makes it worthwhile.
I suppose you have to keep in mind that no matter how many times you've done it, number of years and all that, there's probably always going to be someone in the house at any given production that has never seen it before.
Oh, absolutely.
Probably somebody that doesn't even know the story. As incredible as that sounds, there probably is somebody in that case.
We do student matinees, and they end up being my favorite just because the children have no filter, and it is sometimes their first theatrical experience, and you get that immediate reaction, and then that's kind of like rediscovering the story for me every time we do a student matinee.
Yeah. They're just amazed. They're probably just in awe of what you do and the circumstances that you do it under. The costuming has to be, well, it may be difficult, maybe some quick changes and things, but it also has to be a lot of fun to put out some of those things on.
It is a lot of fun. It's a great group, and we become quite the family.
Yeah. It wouldn't feel like Christmas at this point, I think, if I didn't do it.
I often tell people, don't take your eyes off the paperweight.
No, follow the paperweight. That's what I tell people, too.
It appears again and again.
I just wrote a children's book about the paperweight.
Did you? Mm-hmm. What kind of attack did you take on that?
It didn't really, but you could. It's really
this. Paperweight comes and goes and plays a significant role for a paperweight.
It does. It does.
Pops back all the time, doesn't it?
It's key.
Yeah. I love the, I don't want to give too much away. I like the scene where Jacob Marley comes.
That's always
one
a favorite.
Of my favorites.
Mark Robbins.
It's one of my favorites. It's Mark
Another
Robbins
great local actor,
year.
Yes.
Is Jacob Marley. Of course, he's dead as a doornail, you know.
He is.
There's no point
Whatever
in
that
understanding
means.
The story if you don't understand that. Yeah. He was dead. He was dead. And that's it. You know? But maybe not it.
Not it.
But it's a great scene with the chains. And I, like I say, I can't give too much away, which is hard. Because they seem to have a lot of fun. With those chains.
They do.
Now, Mark and Gary get along, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They have the Scrooge and Marley dressing room downstairs. That's always just radiating Christmas spirit and Christmas music.
Yeah, you have performers that have been with the show maybe their first year, and then you have performers that have been there 20 years. Mm-hmm.
Peggy Friesen has done it for 30 years.
Well, she is...
Miss Fezziwig.
And Mrs. Fezziwig.
She also plays the harp
and
throughout
the
show.
As well. Now, the harp is very important.
Oh, yes. It's
part
beautiful.
Of the show. The music is great. The sound effects are great. The story, of course, is great. And there's always a few little, I always notice a few little things. Like, for instance, going back to the paper, there seemed to be more of an emphasis on looking at the paperweight. I think, wasn't there a line added by Gary about the paperweight? Not that I should be dwelling on the paperweight.
I dwell on it every day, Michael. it's just, it's representative, really, of, the connection that has been lost between, a father figure and the character I play, which, is just one of the many, many themes throughout this show that is so relatable and universal for audiences to connect with and to really feel the heart of. And that's, those are the things that we try and simplify and focus on so that they really come across. So, not so much about the paperweight, but that gets us there.
Well, I can remember the first time I saw it years ago. Hadn't really been exposed much. Oh, maybe a cartoon version of it on television and all that. It's so much more endearing in person. It has kind of a dark aspect to it at times because we reach inside of ourselves because there's a dark place in all of us that we relate to. We all have that fear of death. Let's be honest, unless you want to object. I think everyone does. So this kind of...
A chance at redemption.
That's right. He has a chance at redemption.
Yeah. And one of the great things that new director this year, Jerry Giannacchio, brought to the table was just that this isn't just a man discovering how to be good. It's a man rediscovering how to be good. So it's a good person that throughout his life has
made some poor choices.
Yeah, and has run into some things that have taken him down a bad road. And so this is a return to
when he was a child.
The good light.
It was probably better. Then things happened over the years, and you follow this progression.
He's just misunderstood. The
That's what they all say.
And that leads us into the song that we wrote.
Okay, let's go for it.
It's called Fred's Paperweight.
Yeah. Shanna, one, two.
Well, the Christmas Carol has already opened, and it's been running. It will run through Thursday, December 26th at the Spencer Theater. So I guess they're giving you Christmas off, but then they work you the day after Christmas. Is that how it works?
We do.
We do two shows on Christmas Eve and then two the day after Christmas. But that Christmas Eve show, I don't think there's a dry eye in the house. It's a fantastic experience. That's the show to go to, so get your tickets now.
I always see it early in the run. Does the atmosphere change towards the end of the run? Is it more sad and melancholy?
Oh, no. I just think that, whenever someone gets hit with that Christmas feeling, I think it just intensifies the closer we get to Christmas Day. At least in my experience, I feel like people tend to be more loving and giving and
charitable.
Kind. No one throws rocks. It's...
Well, in Dickens' day, when he wrote the... he threw paperweights.
Someone throw a rock at
you. Are you saying the audience should throw rocks?
This is Fred. It's pelted.
No. They start throwing money. It's wonderful.
I was trying to be serious here. In Dickens' day, when he wrote the original story, things were pretty bleak.
Yes.
I mean, that was a bleak time in England, and that's reflected in a lot of his
bleak time
stories.
For him as well. Yeah. I mean, everything he talks about with the treadmills and the workhouses of children, and that was happening, and he was Dickens was actually a huge advocate to get children out of those situations, and I mean, it shows up in a lot of his work, like Oliver, and he talks a lot about that. But at that time, I mean, the very reason he even wrote this story was to try to make some money, because he had a lot of children. And it was a difficult time.
Yeah, there's a couple of scenes in the show, in fact, that kind of bring that to the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one in particular with the Ghost of Christmas Present, as a matter of fact. It's a big cast. There's a lot of local. We've mentioned Mark Robbins and Gary Neal Johnson and Peggy Friesen and yourselves, both of you.
Katie Kalaherka is Christmas Past.
That's right. A big cast. Everything stay organized easily.
It's a fine-tuned machine, I would say that.
I guess it would have to be.
Brooke Redler, our stage manager, is she's on top of it, and she has a very thick you know, book that everything has been written down from now, from years ago. So she knows kind of
everything
that's happened in this show in the past decade, probably. And she calls all of those cues, and it's a fine-tuned machine.
Yeah, and it's just an amazing group of people on stage and off stage that come together this year every time with some new additions that fall into place so quickly. And yeah, it just becomes, you know, it really makes you feel great around the holidays to be working.
It has become one of Kansas City's longtime traditions, and will continue to be. And I guess there was one year where they had Christmas Story, and you were in there.
We don't talk about that.
Oh, it was fun. Yeah, we had a Christmas Story, but then we came back.
According to what I've heard, and who am I? Audience demand said, bring it back.
It's a Christmas tradition. It's a family tradition in Kansas City to come and see this wonderful story, and we have a great time telling it.
And traditions are important over the holidays, especially. The Christmas Carol is currently running and will run through December 26th at the Spencer Theater various times during the week, evening, some afternoon matinees as well. Some performances for schools probably during the daytime, during the week. So you need to check the website for the calendar on when you can go and see it. KCREP.org or the Central Ticket Office phone number for either one of the reps currently running shows, 816-235-2700. Two shows running over the Christmas season. The Christmas Carol at the Spencer Theater on the campus of UMKC, and Santa Land Diaries running at the Copacan stage. That's downtown Kansas City, the H&R Block building, right down, just right to the west of the Power and Light District downtown. Two shows for your holiday enjoyment. You can learn about them both by going on their website, kcrep.org, or the phone number, once again, 816-235-2700. I want to thank all my guests.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
From Christmas Carol, Rusty Sneary, and Vanessa Severo, Mr. and Mrs. Fred, as well as others. You see them on stage at various times in other parts as well.
Mrs. Fred.
And Brian,
Merry Christmas.
And Brian Sills and Shanna Jones from the Santa Land Diaries, that mischievous elf.
Crumpet,
that's right. That's the name. Thank both of you for being
thank
with
you.
Us as well. The Jazz Insider is here this week. He is ready and raring to go. Some fine jazz is coming up this afternoon. KKFI is known for its jazz and its blues. So we'll have jazz from 1 to 3. We'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that crossing the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you.